This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at KTOO 104.3. And I have a short for you. I was speaking with some listeners the other day, and they both liked my show, but they liked when I did the Flash, really quick, short stories, and they each like something different, either something mysterious and suspenseful or funny, hilarious. I said, okay, there you have it. So that's what you're getting tonight. I'll give you a chance to get settled, and I'll be back with some Flash shorts here at KTOO 104.3 with Telling Tales with Ms. G. And this is Ms. G. I'm back with Telling Tales here at 104.3 KTOO. So, as I said, I was spoke with some listeners, and they really liked the show, and they really like short shorts, so I found one by Robert Burton Robinson. It's called Contract for Lois. Hope you like it. Lois pulled into the handicapped parking spot closest to the main doors. It was Tuesday night, and this was her usual trip to Charlie's big box for milk, eggs, and other staples. She locked her car and walked toward the main entrance, pulling the hood over her head to avoid the frigid wind. Two high school girls hurried past her, giggling. Lois saw one of them take an MP3 player out of her coat pocket. The other girl had something in her hand, too. They were headed for an old panel van. She went after them, limping due to the pain in her back. "Who do you think you're fooling, girls? They've got security cameras all over the store." The girls walked faster. The side door of the van opened and they jumped in. Lois reached the van, huffing and puffing. Her back was beginning to throb. She banged, "Open this door." The door slid open and two young men reached out and grabbed her. One was wearing a Harry Potter mask. The other looked like Dumbledore. They pulled her inside and shut the door. "You're only making it worse," she said calmly. "I'm trying to help you. Believe me, it's not worth it. You don't want to live a life of crime. It may seem glamorous on TV, but..." "Shut up, old woman," said one of the men. The two girls climbed up to the front passenger seat and went out the door. Dumbledore hopped into the driver's seat and started the engine. "Don't be a fool, young man," said Lois. "If you drive away, this is an abduction. Do you want to go to prison? Release me right now, and we can forget all about this." "But you won't forget, Lois," said the man in the Harry Potter mask. "How do you know my name?" "Oh, I know all about you, Lois." He turned and shouted to his buddy, "Let's go." "You apparently don't know enough about me," she said. "I'm the senior loss prevention tech at this store. Been here for 10 years. I've seen plenty of punks like you come and go, mostly to jail." Wouldn't worry so much about where I'm going, lady. The van drove out of the parking lot. After a couple of minutes, Lois said, What's your name?
Potter.
Harry Potter.
Haven't you heard of me?
I'm a wizard. He whipped out a pistol. And this is my magic wand. He laughed. Dumbledore laughed, too.
Very funny, she said. It's good that you two have a sense of humor. You're going to need that in prison.
Shut up. He backhanded her in the face. She grimaced.
Oh, I'm sorry, he said, mocking her. Did that hurt your back? Because I know you've had two surgeries on it. But you won't have to worry with that anymore.
He took out a black handkerchief and blindfolded her.
Why would you want to hurt me? I mean, what's in it for you?
A new van, said Dumbledore, laughing.
Shut up, man, said Harry.
Is this where we turn, Franklin Avenue? Said Dumbledore.
Don't tell her where we're going, you idiot.
That's the point of the blindfold.
It's not going to matter when she's dead.
Yeah, said Harry, that's true. Harry and his partner walked into Charlie's office. Charlie was sitting at his desk eating a pizza.
Well, said Charlie, did you do it?
You mean, did we kill her? Said Harry. Charlie waved his arms frantically.
Don't say that. Somebody out there might hear you.
Sorry, said Harry.
And shut the door, said Charlie.
I've got it. It was a woman's voice. Charlie cringed. Harry and his buddy separated, revealing Lois, who stepped inside and closed the door.
Did you really think you could get away with it, Charlie? Said Lois.
Charlie was stunned.
We won't take up much of your time, said Lois. We know you're busy running your store. So as soon as you pay us what you owe us, we'll get out of your hair.
I don't owe you anything, said Charlie.
Yes, you do, said Lois. And you've done everything you can to avoid paying up.
It was a workplace accident, and I haven't been able to come back to work. You owe me $200,000 minimum. And I happen to know that you keep a large amount of cash in your safe.
Not $200,000, said Charlie.
Fine, said Lois. Then I'll take whatever you've got as a down payment.
No, said Charlie.
No, said Lois. She nodded to Harry.
Harry pulled out his pistol and pointed it at Charlie.
So this is the thanks I get for giving you a job, said Charlie to Harry.
You haven't paid us yet, said Harry.
You didn't do the job, said Charlie, pointing at Lois.
But you still can.
Harry and I have a deal, said Lois. I'm going to pay him for doing nothing. Now get the money out of the safe.
Charlie got up slowly and went to his safe.
You're crazy, Lois.
He unlocked the safe and opened it.
All of it, said Lois.
Charlie spun around with a gun in his hand.
Lois kicked him in the face.
The gun discharged, the bullet barely missing her. The silencer muted the sound of the shot.
Lois figured it was unlikely that anyone outside the office heard it.
She snatched the pistol from Charlie's hand.
You're more stupid than I thought, Charlie, said Lois. Now put all the cash on the desk.
She raked her arm across the desk, knocking his pizza box and Pepsi can to the floor.
Charlie gathered up all the money from the safe and placed it on his desk.
Harry's eyes bulged at the sight of the cash.
Now we're talking, he said, grinning.
Lois yanked down a cloth shopping bag that was proudly attached to the wall for display purposes.
Charlie's big box, where everything is bigger and cheaper.
Fill her up, please, she threw the bag at Charlie.
He began to put the cash into the bag.
I'm sorry about your back, Lois, really. I should have covered your expenses sooner.
Right, said Lois. And what about my pain and suffering?
Yes, of course, that too.
He put the last stack of cash into the bag.
Lois picked it up.
So are we good? Said Charlie.
Well, let me think.
Lois turned the gun on Harry.
Sorry, son.
Harry couldn't seem to comprehend what was about to happen.
Lois put a bullet through the center of his heart.
He collapsed without firing a shot.
His buddy went for the door.
She dropped him like a shot to the back of the head.
What a shame, said Lois, turning to Charlie.
No, wait!
Charlie held up both hands.
You know, there's something you forgot about me, said Lois, picking up the bag of money. It's the reason you hired me 10 years ago.
What's that? Said Charlie, shaking.
Lois nailed him right between the eyes.
That I'm a badass. She walked out.
The end.
That was Contract for Lois by Robert Burton Robinson. Hope you enjoyed that short, and I'll be back with another one. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And hello, this is Ms. G. I'm back with more Telling Tales here at KTO 104.3. And my next story is by O. Henry, an oldie but goodie, The Princess and the Puma. So there had to be a king and queen, of course. The king was a terrible old man who wore six shooters and spurs and shouted in such a tremendous voice that the rattlers on the prairie would run into their holes under the prickly pear. Before there was a royal family, they called the man Whispering Ben. When he came to own 50,000 acres of land and more cattle than he could count, they called him O'Donnell, the Cattle King. The queen had been a Mexican girl from Laredo. She made a good, mild Colorado Claro wife and even succeeded in teaching Ben to modify his voice sufficiently while in the house to keep the dishes from being broken. When Ben got to be king, she would sit on the gallery of Espinosa Ranch and weave rush mats. When wealth became so irresistible and oppressive that upholstered chairs and a center table were brought down from San Antone in the wagons, she bowed her smooth, dark head and shared the fate of the Dané. To avoid les majestés, you have been presented first to the king and queen. They do not enter the story, which might be called The Chronicle of the Princess, The Happy Thought, and The Lion That Bungled His Job. Josefa O'Donnell was the surviving daughter, the princess. From her mother, she inherited warmth of nature and a dusky, semi-tropic beauty. From Ben O'Donnell, the royal, she acquired a store in intrepidity, common sense, and the faculty of ruling. The combination was worth going miles to see. Josefa, while riding her pony at a gallop, could put 5 out of 6 bullets through a tomato can swinging at the end of a string. She could play for hours with a white kitten she owned, dressing it in all manner of absurd clothes, scorning a pencil, she could tell you out of her head what 1,545 two-year-olds would bring on the hoof at $8.50 per head. Roughly speaking, the Espinoza Ranch is 40 miles long and 30 broad, but mostly leased land. Josefa, on her pony, had prospected over every mile of it. Every cowpuncher on the range knew her by sight and was a loyal vassal. Ripley Givens, foreman of one of the Espinoza outfits, saw her one day and made up his mind to form a royal matrimonial alliance. Presumptuous? No. In those days in the Nueces country, a man was a man. And after all, the title of cattle king does not presuppose blood royal. Often it only signifies that its owner wears the crown in token of his magnificent qualities and the art of cattle stealing. One day, Ripley Givens rode over to the Double Elm Ranch to inquire about a bunch of strayed yearlings. He was late in setting out on his return trip, and it was sundown when he struck the White Horse Crossing of the Nueces. From there to his own camp, it was 16 miles. To the Espinoza Ranch house, it was 12. Givens was tired. He decided to pass the night at the crossing. There was a fine water hole in the riverbed. The banks were thickly covered with great trees, undergrown with brush. Back from the water hole, 50 yards, was a stretch of curly mesquite grass, supper for his horse and bed for himself. Givens staked his horse and spread out his saddle blankets to dry. He sat down with his back against a tree and rolled a cigarette. From somewhere in the dense timber along the river came a sudden, rageful, shivering wail. The pony danced at the end of his rope and blew a whistling snort of comprehending fear. Givens puffed at his cigarette, but he reached leisurely for his pistol belt, which lay on the grass, and twirled the cylinder of his weapon tentatively. A great gar plunged with a loud splash into the water hole. A little brown rabbit skipped around a bunch of cat claw and sat twitching his whiskers and looking humorously at Givens. The pony went on eating grass. It is well to be reasonably watchful when a Mexican lion sings soprano along the arroyos at sundown. The burden of his song may be that young calves and fat lambs are scarce, and that he has a carnivorous desire for your acquaintance. In the grass lay an empty fruit can, cast there by some former sojourner. Givens caught sight of it with a grunt of satisfaction. In his coat pocket, tied behind his saddle, was a handful or two of ground coffee. Black coffee and cigarettes, what ranchero could desire more? In 2 minutes, he had a little fire going clearly. He started with his can for the waterhole. When, within 15 yards of its edge, he saw, between the bushes, a side-saddled pony with down-dropped reins cropping grass a little distance to his left. Just rising from her hands and knees on the brink of the waterhole was Josefa O'Donnell. She had been drinking water, and she brushed the sand from the palms of her hands. 10 yards away to her right, half concealed by a clump of sacuista, Givens saw the crouching form of the Mexican lion. His amber eyelids glared hungrily. 6 feet from them was the tip of the tail, stretched straight like a pointer's. His hind quarters rocked with the motion of the cat tribe, preliminary to leaping. Givens did what he could. His six-shooter was 35 yards away, lying on the grass. He gave a loud yell and dashed between the lion and the princess. The ruckus, as Givens called it afterward, was brief and somewhat confused. When he arrived on the line of attack, he saw a dim streak in the air and heard a couple of faint cracks. Then 100 pounds of Mexican lion plumped down upon his head and flattened him with a heavy jar to the ground. He remembered calling out, "Let him up now, no fear gouging." And then he crawled from under the lion like a worm, with his mouth full of grass and dirt and a big lump on the back of his head where it had struck the root of a water elm. The lion lay motionless. Givens, feeling aggrieved and suspicious of Fowles, shook his fist at the lion and shouted, "I'll wrestle you again for 20. And then he got back to himself. Josefa was standing in her tracks, quietly reloading her silver-mounted 38. It had not been a difficult shot. The lion's head made an easier mark than a tomato can swinging at the end of a string. There was a provoking, teasing, maddening smile upon her mouth and in her dark eyes. The would-be rescuing knight felt the fire of his fiasco burn down to his soul. Here had been his chance, the chance that he had dreamed of, and Momus, and not Cupid, had presided over it. The satyrs, in their wood, were no doubt holding their sides in hilarious, silent laughter. There had been something like vaudeville, say, Signor Givens and his funny knockabout act with the stuffed lion. "Is that you, Mr. Givens?" said Josefa, in her deliberate saccharine contralto. "You nearly spoiled my shot when you yelled. Did you hurt your head when you fell?" "Oh, no," said Givens quietly. "That didn't hurt." He stooped ignominiously and dragged his best Stetson hat from under the beast. It was crushed and wrinkled to a fine comedy effect. Then he knelt down and softly stroked the fierce, open-jawed head of the dead lion. "Poor old Bill," he exclaimed mournfully. "What's that?" asked Josefa sharply. "Of course you didn't know, Miss Josefa," said Givens, with an air of one allowing magnanimity to triumph over grief. "Nobody can blame you. I tried to save him, but I couldn't let you know in time." "Save who?" "Why, Bill. I've been looking for him all day. You see, he's been our camp pet for 2 years. Poor old fellow, he wouldn't have hurt a cotton ball rabbit. I'll break the boys all up when they hear about it. But you couldn't tell, of course, that Bill was just trying to play with you." Josefa's black eyes burned steadily upon him. Ripley Givens met the test successfully. He stood rumpling the yellow-brown curls on his head pensively. In his eyes was regret, not unmingled with a gentle reproach. His smooth features were set to a pattern of indisputable sorrow. Josefa wavered. "What was your pet doing here?" she asked, making a last stand. "There is no camp near the White Horse Crossing." "The old rascal ran away from camp yesterday," answered Givens readily. "It's a wonder the coyotes didn't scare him to death. You see, Jim Webster, our horse wrangler, brought a little terrier pup into camp last week. The pup made life miserable for Bill. He used to chase him around and chew his hind legs for hours at a time. Every night when bedtime came, Bill would sneak in under one of the boys' blankets and sleep to keep the pup from finding him. I reckon he must have been worried pretty desperate or he wouldn't have run away. He was always afraid to get out of sight of camp." Josefa looked at the body of the fierce animal. Givens gently patted one of the formidable paws that could have killed a yearling calf with one blow. Slowly, a red flush widened upon the dark olive face of the girl. Was it the signal of shame of the true sportsman who has brought down ignoble quarry? Her eyes grew softer, and the lowered lids drove away all their bright mockery. "I'm very sorry," she said humbly, "but he looked so big and jumped so high that..." "Poor old Bill was hungry," interrupted Givens in quick defense of the deceased. "We always made him jump for his supper in camp. He would lie down and roll over for a piece of meat. When he saw you, he thought he was going to get something to eat from you." Suddenly, Josefa's eyes opened wide. "I might have shot you," she exclaimed. "You ran right in between. You risked your life to save your pet. That was fine, Mr. Givens. I like a man who is kind to animals." Yes, there was even admiration in her gaze now. After all, there was a hero rising out of the ruins of the anticlimax. The look on Givens' face would have secured him a high position in the SPCA. I always loved him, said he. Horses, dogs, Mexican lions, cows, alligators. Oh, I hate alligators, instantly demurred Josefa. Crawly, muddy things. Did I say alligators? Said Givens. I meant antelopes, of course. Josefa's conscience drove her to make further amends. She held out her hand penitently. There was a bright, unshed drop in each of her eyes. Please forgive me, Mr. Givens, won't you? I'm only a girl, you know, and I was frightened at first. I'm very, very sorry I shot Bill. You don't know how ashamed I feel. I wouldn't have done it for anything. Givens took the proffered hand. He held it for a time while he allowed the generosity of his nature to overcome his grief at the loss of Bill. At last it was clear that he had forgiven her. Please don't speak of it any more, Miss Josefa. 'Twas enough to frighten any young lady the way Bill looked. I'll explain it all right to the boys. Are you really sure you don't hate me? Josefa came closer to him impulsively. Her eyes were sweet, oh, sweet and pleading with gracious penitence. I would hate anyone who would kill my kitten. And how daring and kind of you to risk being shot when you tried to save him. How very few men would have done that. Victory wrested from defeat. Vaudeville turned into drama. Bravo, Ripley Givens. It was now twilight. Of course, Miss Josefa could not be allowed to ride onto the ranch house alone. Givens resaddled his pony in spite of that animal's reproachful glances and rode with her. Side by side, they galloped across the smooth grass, the princess and the man who was kind to animals. The prairie odors of fruitful earth and delicate bloom were thick and sweet around them. Coyotes yelping over there on the hill, no fear. And yet, Josefa rode closer. A little hand seemed to grope. Givens found it with his own. The ponies kept an even gait. The hands lingered together, and the owner of one explained. I never was frightened before, but just think how terrible it would be to meet a really wild lion. Poor Bill, I'm so glad you came with me. O'Donnell was sitting on the ranch gallery. Hello, Rip, he shouted. That you? He rode in with me, said Josefa. I lost my way and was late. Much obliged, called the cattle king. Stop over, Rip, and ride to camp in the morning. But Givens would not. He would push on to camp. There was a bunch of steers to start off on the trail at daybreak. He said good night and trotted away. An hour later, when the lights were out, Josefa in her night robe came to her door and called to the king in his own room across the brick-paved hallway. Say, Pop, you know that old Mexican lion they call the gotch-eared devil, the one that killed Gonzales, Mr. Martin's sheep herder, and about 50 calves on the Salada Range? Well, I settled his hash this afternoon over at the White Horse Crossing. Put two balls in his head with my .38 while he was on the jump. I knew him by the slice gone from his left ear that old Gonzales cut off with his machete. You couldn't have made a better shot yourself, Daddy. Bully for you, thundered whispering Ben from the darkness of the royal chamber. That was The Princess and the Puma by O. Henry. This has been Ms. G. giving you Telling Tales. Until next time, good night.